Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Authors on Tour is produced in partnership with the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. My name is Darren Fote, and tonight we have a rather unusual event. The popular children's book author, Lemony Snicket, is rumored to be in town to read from and discuss his latest book, The Penultimate Peril, A Series of Unfortunate Events, published by HarperCollins. There are so many young fans of Lemony Snicket who want to hear him speak, in fact, thousands of them, we have moved our podcast from the Tattered Cover to a nearby auditorium. In the weeks to come, we will return to the Tattered Cover with Nicholas Sparks, Will Arntz, Joan Didion, Andrew Weil, Lynn Truss, Blair Underwood, Chris Elliott, Frank McCourt, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. If we can get the crowd to settle down, it will be time to begin. I think I see the mysterious Mr. Snicket emerging from the crowd.
No, I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry for those of you who were forced to stay in this room rather than the lucky few who were allowed to escape to a ballroom or even into the city of Denver. I don't know who that woman was who was talking at you, or why she would tell you such a horrible lie. I wouldn't take a picture of this if I were you. For when it goes in the album and you look back on your past, you'll say, oh yes, that was the latest in a long line of disappointing evenings. As I said, I don't know who that woman was or why she would tell you all such a terrible lie. I don't know why anyone would lie to children. Although it is fun. I don't know why that strange-looking woman would applaud. I don't know why anyone would state that Lemony Snicket was here. I know he was supposed to be here. It was written on the schedule. It was a scheduled appearance. It was on the schedule that he would be here. It was scheduled. But I'm afraid the sad truth is that the truth is sad, and that Mr. Snicket is not here this evening, and so I am here in his place. There's nothing funny about it. It's not funny at all. It's actually quite sad. I'm afraid something sad happened to Mr. Snicket that made it impossible for him to come to this synagogue turned Pentecostal church turned secular humanist gathering place. It's quite sad, actually. I can scarcely think about it without weeping or without hoping someone else will weep. I'm afraid he went on a picnic. There's nothing funny about that. Now, I'm sure that just about all of us know what a picnic is, but if any of us were recently admitted to a hospital for some sort of brain surgery and find that their bandaged skull is still aching with misinformation. Who here can give me a definition of a picnic? Who knows what a definition? Yes, you? Yes, exactly. A picnic is when you have a blanket and you take it outside to a park and you have food and you eat it. I couldn't have put it better myself, although I just did. And I would say that about 99% of the... Well, about 70% of... About half the time, I would say, that nothing terrible happens at a picnic. But I'm afraid this was one of the other halves of the time. Does anyone have a guess as to what went wrong at the picnic? Yes, you have a guess? A rainstorm! Weather. How many picnics has it ruined in our lives? Thousands, madam. But no, you're entirely wrong. Yes, you have a guess? Sorry? A snake in the basket. I've lost track of the number of times when I've been enjoying myself sitting on the blanket outside when I open the basket and a snake ruins all of my fun. But no, you're also very, very wrong. Yes?
Okay. A swarm of bees just happened to come.
A swarm of bees? An excellent guess. Also wrong, like so many excellent things. But you're warm, by which I do not mean that the temperature in this Orthodox synagogue turned Pentecostal church turned secular humanist gathering area is warm, although it is. But I mean you are close because it is a member of the animal kingdom. An animal, not a human. An animal was the cause of all of the trouble. You have a guess, madam.
A bear?
A bear? Particularly in Colorado, where there are so many vicious beasts, even the bear can take credit for being especially terrifying, but no. Yes? Sorry? A rhino? I'm seeing that the schools in the Denver area live up quite thoroughly to their reputation. No, sir, a rhino is more native to Boulder, really, than to Denver. An even more terrible beast live in Colorado Springs, but luckily you don't have to guess. You don't have to guess, because the beast has been captured. It is in a bag inside another bag. And as I cross to the first bag, slowly to increase suspense, all of you will be sorry that you're the ones in this auditorium and not the people safely downstairs where all is inaudible and invisible. Because now the creature is only in one bag, and that makes it 9 times more terrifying because you will very soon be able to see it. And before I show it to you, I should say that this creature should not be viewed by children. So if there are any children here, if you, madam, are the proud mother of a child, tell it to leave. Because the last child who underwent this transformation, who saw this creature underwent a horrible transformation, a physical transformation caused by fear and disgust, as so many of us have undergone physical transformations based on fear and disgust. Yes, yes. This child who viewed this creature had their hair turned snow white. And when I say snow white, I don't mean the lovable character created by the Disney Corporation who skips around the field with midgets. I mean white, snow white, the color of your sweater, if it were clean. White. And so, this is your last chance to head for one of the brilliantly marked exits, or, for convenience, to throw yourself out of one of the stained glass windows. Rather,
than viewing this horrible creature! It is ghastly! It is despicable! It is unnerving! It is ghastly! Hiding yourself high in the balcony will not keep you safe. Even if you are in the middle of a row, you can view this horrible thing. Look at it! Touch its teeth! Don't touch its teeth! Are you insane? Did you think you were safe? Did you think you were safe? Youth will not protect you. Age will not protect you. Brilliance will not protect you. Lack of brilliance will not protect you. It is a terrible, terrible beast. The most horrifying part of the beast, I think we would all agree, were its teeth. Wouldn't you agree? You wouldn't disagree in front of all these people. Only a villain would do that. And it was the teeth that caused all of the trouble. Who has a guess as to where on Mr. Snicket's body the teeth bit him? Yes, you're exactly right. The armpit. He was bitten on the armpit. The teeth went into his armpit. The teeth went into his armpit. The teeth of the creature went into his armpit. And what happened when the teeth of this terrible beast reached his armpit is that Mr. Snicket was paralyzed. And paralyzed means what? Exactly, that you can't move. He was paralyzed from the armpit down, all the way down from the armpit down. And believe it or not, I am not a trained ballerina. I am self-taught. But nevertheless, I will perform a short dance describing what it was like for Mr. Snicket to try and reach you here while being paralyzed from the armpit down. And the dance goes like this. So you can see that while it may be an amusing method of transportation, it is not an efficient one. And so Mr. Snicket cannot be here. And so I am here instead. And why? Why are we here? Why would I tell you such a scarcely believable story? Well, the question why we are here is a philosophical one which will never be answered to our satisfaction. But in terms of why I'm telling you this story, it's because we're going to be learning not one, and also, curiously enough, not two, but three moral lessons. Three moral lessons. This is the first of three moral lessons. This, my index finger pointing at you, is the first of three moral lessons. One, two, three, each represented by a finger. This is the first of three, and it is, of course, never raise your hand. That's right, when you raise your hand, you expose your armpit to all sorts of horrible creatures. And so it appears to me that some people today in this former Orthodox synagogue and Pentecostal church turned secular humanist gathering place, some of you, it appears to me, go to school. Do you go to school? You work in a factory. School? School. And so when you return to school tomorrow and the teacher says, to review, who can tell me what 2 + 2 is? Anyone? Who can? Just let someone else answer it. It's only school. And Denver schools at that. Let someone else receive a good education and remain free of infection. And that's the first of the three. Now, it of course is very sad, but somehow appropriate that Mr. Snicket was delayed by an unfortunate event, because Mr. Snicket spends a great deal of his time researching and writing down unfortunate events in books that look more or less like this. Who here has read something of Mr. Snicket's work? Have you learned nothing? Have I not wandered at great personal risk all over this synagogue turned Pentecostal church turned secular humanist gathering place and performed a dance on this very floor? And we're only on the first of the three. Now, without risking death, who here has read something of Mr. Snicket's work? Thank goodness. I see by the optimistic applause that no one has. Thank goodness. But nevertheless, I'm going to read a short selection from this Mr. Snicket's first book, The Bad Beginning, in order to teach the second of the three moral lessons. The second of the three moral lessons, each represented by a finger. And we're on the second of the three. The first, of course, never raise your hand. And the second of the three, this my middle finger pointing at you, is the second of the three moral lessons. And it is, of course, if you see Count Olaf, scream and run away. When you see Count Olaf, scream and run away. And many people ask, do these books have any messages for young people? And of course they have messages for young people, madam. If you see Count Olaf, scream and run away. One of the most important lessons in all literature. I'm sorry, all questions must be submitted in writing 72 hours ago. And as I read this short selection, we'll be doing something called EAP, which is what? EAP? E-A-P? Anyone? EAP? EAP? Your armpit, madam. EAP is eurythmic auditory participation. Duh. I see I will have to teach you that as well. For most of the afternoon, Violet Klaus and Sunny cooked the puttanesca sauce according to the recipe. Violet roasted the garlic and washed and chopped the anchovies. Klaus peeled the tomatoes and pitted the olives. And Sunny banged on a pot with a wooden spoon, singing a rather repetitive song she had written herself. Why, someone knows what EAP is after all. Because all it is that I ask for volunteers from the audience. It is a volunteer position. You will not be paid. Your armpit, sir. Your armpit. Volunteers to make the appropriate sound effect. If you are mute and you have no limbs, you cannot volunteer. You would like to be the first volunteer? I need you to make a sound that sounds like a baby banging on a pot with a wooden spoon, singing a rather repetitive song she's written herself. Go. Excellent. Violet roasted the garlic and washed and chopped the anchovies. Klaus peeled the tomatoes and pitted the olives. And Sunny banged on a pot with a wooden spoon, singing a rather repetitive song she had written herself. It's like I'm there. And all three of the children felt less miserable than they had since their arrival at Count Olaf's. The smell of cooking food is often a calming one, and the kitchen grew cozy as the sauce simmered, a culinary term which means cooked over low heat. The three orphans spoke of pleasant memories of their parents, and as they talked, they mixed and tasted the chocolate pudding. Just as they were placing the pudding in the refrigerator to cool, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny heard a loud booming sound, and now I need someone who can make a loud booming sound. Your armpit, sir. A loud booming sound? Eek. Just as they were placing the pudding in the refrigerator to cool, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny heard a loud booming sound as the front door was flung open, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you who was home. I'm sure I don't have to tell you. Orphans! Count Olaf called out in his scratchy voice. Where are you, orphans? In the kitchen, Count Olaf, Klaus called. We're just finishing dinner. You'd better be, Count Olaf said, and strode into the kitchen. He gazed at all three Baudelaire children with his shiny, shiny eyes. My troop is right behind me, and they are very hungry. Where is the roast beef?
We didn't make roast beef, Violet said. We made puttanesca sauce.
What? Count Olaf asked. No roast beef?
You didn't tell us you wanted roast beef, Klaus said. Count Olaf slid toward the children so that he looked even taller than he was. His eyes grew even brighter, and his one eyebrow raised in anger.
In agreeing to adopt you, he said, I have become your father. And as your father, I am not someone to be trifled with. I demand that you serve roast beef to myself and to my guests.
We don't have any, Violet cried. We made puttanesca sauce.
No, 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 Sunny shouted.
Count Olaf looked down at Sunny, who had spoken so suddenly. With an inhuman roar, and now I need someone who can make an inhuman roar. Yes, you?
That was very good.
Count Olaf looked down at Sunny, who had spoken so suddenly. With an inhuman roar,
he picked her up in one scraggly hand and raised her so she was staring at him in the eye. Needless to say, Sunny was very frightened and began crying immediately. Too scared to even try to bite the hand that held her.
That's enough.
Put her down immediately, you beast, Klaus shouted. He jumped up trying to rescue Sunny from the grasp of the Count, but he was holding her too high to reach.
Count Olaf looked down at Klaus and smiled a terrible, toothy grin, raising the wailing Sunny up even higher in the air. He seemed about to drop her to the floor when there was a large burst of laughter, and now I need the balcony, this balcony right here, to produce a large burst of laughter. No, no. That was okay. But you sound like a group of predominantly young people being entertained by a genius children's author, and you really should sound more like a group of drunk and unruly adults coming home from a party. So try again. I knew you would know what that sounded like. He seemed about to drop her to the floor when there was a large burst of laughter. In the next room.
Olaf! Where's Olaf?
Voices called out. Count Olaf paused, still holding the wailing Sunny up in the air, as members of his theater troupe walked into the kitchen. Soon they were crowding the room, an assortment of strange-looking characters of all shapes and sizes. There was a bald man with a very long nose, dressed in a long black robe. There were two women who had bright white powder all over their faces, making them look like ghosts. Behind the women was a man with very long and skinny arms, at the end of which were two hooks instead of hands. There was a person who was extremely fat who looked like neither a man nor a woman. And behind this person, standing in the doorway, were an assortment of people the children could not see, but who promised to be just as frightening.
Here you are, Olaf, said one of the white-faced women. What in the world are you doing? I'm just disciplining these orphans, Count Olaf said. I've asked them to make dinner, and all they've made is some disgusting sauce.
You can't go easy on children, the man with the hook hand said. They must be taught to obey their elders.
The tall, bald man peered at the youngsters.
Are these, he said to Count Olaf, those wealthy children you were telling me about?
Yes, Count Olaf said. They're so awful, I can scarcely stand to touch them. With that,
He lowered Sunny, who was still wailing, to the floor. Violet and Klaus breathed a sigh of relief. And now, I would like the opposite, neglected balcony, to breathe a sigh of relief. That was very potent. Violet and Klaus breathed a sigh of relief that he had not dropped her from that great height. Count Olaf rubbed his hands together as if he'd been holding something revolting instead of an infant. "Well, enough talk," he said. "I suppose we will eat their dinner, even though it is all wrong. Everyone, follow me to the dining room and I will pour us some wine. Perhaps by the time these brats serve us, we'll be too drunk to care if it is roast beef or not." Now the story goes on from there. And really, to make sure that you're absorbing not only the first of the three moral lessons, never raise your hand, but the second of the three moral lessons, if you see Count Olaf scream and run away, I will read you not only the rest of The Bad Beginning, but really I should read also The Reptile Room and The Wide Window and The Miserable Mill and The Austere Academy and The Ersatz Elevator and The Vile Village and The Hostile Hospital and The Carnivorous Carnival and The Slippery Slope and The Grim Grotto and The Penultimate Peril and all of the other books that I have written, that Mr. Snicket has written. But if I read you all of those books, then the floor of this Orthodox synagogue turned Pentecostal church turned secular humanist gathering place would be covered in hair. We would become so depressed that we would tear out not only our own hair, but the hair of others in our misery and woe. And we would all look unspeakably hideous. And so, in order to save what is left of your aesthetic looks, I will not read any more of these books, but instead teach you the second of the three moral lessons, if you see Count Olaf scream and run away, by singing a song. Yes, a terrible song, but nevertheless a song that is better than these book by Mr. Snicket's that you luckily have not read. And the song goes like this. The Count... No. It's too bad because it's not really the sort of song that would be best a cappella or accompanied by a grand piano, but really it should be a song that I sing while playing the accordion. But I don't have an accordion. I don't suppose that anyone happens to have brought an accordion with them today. Anyone? Did you? What luck. What are the chances that someone sitting on the aisle would happen to have an accordion with them just when I needed one? A lesser mind would think this had all been prearranged. Now, the accordion is an instrument that has been around for hundreds of years and has been hated by thousands of people. And why do we hate things? Well, sometimes we hate them because of entirely inappropriate choices for the Supreme Court. But really, all that means is that we hate things when we do not understand them. And so before I play even one note of that conveniently appearing accordion, I need to demonstrate its scientific working principles. And to do that, I need to ask for $200,000 and a pair of volunteers. A pair of volunteers who are friends with one another. If you weep every night wishing you had a friend, then you can't volunteer. The two of you are friends? Excellent. Please come up here to what was once a bima and then an altar, and it's now merely a stage. Please, come on up. I know some of you were disappointed you weren't chosen, but when you see the amount of pain and suffering that these two people will go through, you'll be glad it's them and not you. What is your name, Adam? Madison, and what is your name, sir? David. Madison and David. And how long have you been friends, Madison and David? 3 years. That's longer than I've been friends with anyone. Now, if you'll stand here, David, and Madison, if you will stand behind your friend, unfold your arms and put them here and squeeze him as hard as you can. Harder! Harder! Forget the past 3 years! Squeeze him! I'll help you! Thank you very much. Sit down. Now, the lucky of you who are sitting in the back, and even luckier ones who are in the balcony, of course, the luckiest people of all who are underneath my feet right now, trapped in the ballroom begging for mercy, they didn't hear what poor people like you had to hear, which was that terrible death gasp of David's as Madison squoze him. I'm sorry, that terrible death gasp of David's as he was squozing. And that is the third of the three moral lessons. The first, never raise your hand. The second, if you see Count Olaf, scream and run away. And the third, and possibly the most important moral lesson, and it is, if you squeeze anything hard enough, eventually it will make a noise. It doesn't matter what it is. If it is a bag of potato chips, if it is your grandmother, if you squeeze anything hard enough, eventually it will make a noise. And the accordion works in the exact same way that Madison and David worked. The accordion, which is a semi-formal instrument, and so I'm removing my jacket, but not my pants as I play it. If you take the accordion out of its case, marveling at the jewels encrusted on its surface, as one day jewels be encrusted on all of our surfaces, and if you strap the accordion to your body, as all of us were once strapped to our bodies, and you press the keys, it makes the following noise, which, although arguably the most pleasant sound to come from the accordion, is not really loud enough to be considered musical. But if you fill it with air, as David until recently was filled with air, and you begin to squoze, it makes this noise, which, although perhaps more hideous, is more appropriate to accompany a song. So now that you understand the accordion, you don't hate it. And now that you don't hate it, you can hear the song. And the song goes like this. I should say that the first part of the song is called vamping, which simply means that you play the same thing over and over and over, and it's a wonderful way to drive people crazy. The Count has an eye on his ankle and lives in a horrible place. He wants all your money. He's never at all funny. He wants to remove your face. And you might be thinking, what a romp this is. But wait till you meet his accomplices. When you see Count Olaf, you're suddenly full of disgust and despair and dismay. In the whole of the soul of Count Olaf, there's no love. When you see Count Olaf, count to zero. Then scream and run away. Scream, 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 and run away. Run, 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 run. Or die, 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 die. What's this called? And what does it do?
two women with powdered white faces and one long-nosed bald man with warts. Things worsen and worsen. There's a hook-handed person and others with nastier parts. This evil and unpleasant group completes Count Olaf's acting. Croup.
Shh, it's my solo.
The goal of Count Olaf is getting control of the fortunes of urchins and orphans. Hooray! I mean horrors! Count Olaf is no laughing matter. When you see Count Olaf count to zero, then scream and run away. Scream, 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 and run away. Run, 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 or die, 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 die. Now, this last part of the song requires eurythmic auditory participation from each and every one of you. And all it is that when I sing the part of the song that says run, you may drum your feet on the floor as if running. Rehearsal! And when I sing the part that says die, you may slump over in the position you hope to find yourselves in your deaths. Rehearsal! And run. Run, 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 or die, 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 run. Run, 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 or die, 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 run. Run, 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 or die, 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 run. Run, 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 or die, 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 run, run, die, die, run, run, die, die, run, die, run, die, run, die, run, die. Die. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I love all, I have warm feelings for certain. Well, thank you very much. And now, I know some of you were hoping to have your books autographed by the author, but as the author isn't here, there's no way that can happen. But nevertheless, in a short period of time, I will be sitting at one of these beautiful tables, and by a strange coincidence matched only by happening to have an accordion just when I wanted one, I have with me here tonight the Lemony Snicket stamp. And I will be sitting at the table, stamping your books, and I will put your name and a few words of what some people rather feebly call wisdom, and also, of course, the date. So when the police come to your house, and they'll come, Madison, and they say, where were you on the 24th of October, 2005? You can prove that you were not committing whatever crime they're going to accuse you of, but that instead you were here at an Orthodox synagogue turned Pentecostal church turned secular humanist place in the presence of something or other. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry it was such a disappointment, and I'll be back in a few minutes after I've explained to the people in the basement just how lucky they were to miss it. Good night.
Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from an auditorium near to the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Nicholas Sparks, Will Arts, Joan Didion, Andrew Weil, Lynn Truss, Blair Underwood, Chris Elliott, Frank McCourt, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on October 24th, 2005. This podcast is copyright 2005 by Lemony Snicket. It may be downloaded solely for the purposes of the listener's own personal use. Listeners are prohibited from distributing, disseminating, or republishing all or part of this podcast in any tangible or electronic form.